You're listening to WBH Radio. It's your boy William Holly. I'm here at the beautiful campus of Brooklyn College. So I walked into the radio station today and I'm like, yo, what's up, everybody? And the responses I got were like, yeah, what up? I'm like, oh, it's finals week, man. We all been there, yo. I remember that. These kids got their heads in the book. They got their coffee. They're groggy, man. But they'll make it through. Special shout out to everybody here at the radio station, man. At my WBCR. Good luck on those finals. Some of the things I've said about the Rockets on this show have been, you know, I wondered if their style of play would translate to the playoffs. I wondered if their up and down, run and gun style of play would work in the playoffs when coaches and teams have the ability to really game plan, have the ability to really focus in, hone in on trying to stop James Harden and the Rockets' strength. You know, I wondered if the Rockets had the ability to change gears. If the shot's not falling, really buckle down and play defense. And for the most part, I think those questions have been answered. The Rockets haven't been able to do it against the Warriors. They're a one-trick pony. When the shot doesn't fall, Hell, we seen them get smacked by 40 points the other day. 40 points. I've never seen that from a legit NBA championship contender in the conference round. The conference championship round. I've never seen that. But listen, I don't want to pat myself on the back and say I told you about the Rockets. Put them to the side. Because again, to me, they've been a joke all year. Put them to the side. What I want to do is ask, is it fair to have those same questions and concerns about NBA guard, Golden State Warrior, Stephen Curry? Is it okay to wonder if Stephen Curry's free-flowing, up and down style of play is going to translate to the playoffs when teams can really focus in on him, when defenders can really tighten up and get in his face? And I think the answer is it is fair to bring that up. Steph Curry has struggled these playoffs. And when I really think about it, that's kind of been a story over the last 3 years. 2 years ago, when the Golden State Warriors captured their first championship, who was the finals MVP? Not Steph Curry. No. They had to bring Andre Iguodala off the bench to save that day. 2 years ago, in the finals, who won that championship? The Cleveland Cavaliers. Wasn't Steph Curry that was able to bring his team to the promised land? No. It was Kyrie Irving that hit the biggest shot in that series. And then last year, who was leading that charge? Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant. So I'm starting to wonder, man, Steph Curry, what's the deal? You seem to take a step back when the playoffs come around. There seems to be a regression. And I don't think anybody's really called him out on that. Jeff Van Gundy on the broadcast the other day said, yo, you journalists, y'all got to get it right. Y'all got to let me know how to evaluate Steph Curry. Because when he has a bad game in the papers, yeah, man, his health, man, I don't know. It's got to be that knee from 10 years ago. But when he has a great game, oh, yeah, there goes our MVP. Which one is it? Y'all went and grabbed some numbers, man, because I really think, like, hold on. I started to scratch my head. Like, the story of Steph Curry's postseason career seems to always be about his struggles, right? 2 years ago, 2016, Steph Curry accomplished something nobody in NBA history ever accomplished. He was awarded the MVP unanimously. That means there were no equals. And in that season, he averaged 30 points a game. Okay, that's great. But then in those playoffs, he only averaged 25 points. That's a decrease of 5 points. And in the finals, it was down to 22. In the regular season, he shot 50%. In those finals, he went down to 40%. What MVP are we letting get away with that? So I'm asking you guys, yo, is it time to reevaluate? Is it time to reevaluate Steph Curry's standing? And I have to check and see, like, maybe I'm bugging because I believe in the playoffs, your stars, they should see an uptick in their stats. You know, forget the athlete mythology and what fans come up with. Yo, big-time players show up, man. He's supposed to just be great like Michael Jordan. He's supposed – okay, put that to the side. From a practical sense, your stars should see an uptick in their stats because, one, in the playoffs, the stars are playing more minutes. They're playing more minutes. So we should see the stats increase. Another piece to the playoffs, each possession matters more. It's not a random day in Toronto in the middle of February. No, these are the playoffs. Every possession counts. So there's more of a game plan. There's more of a concerted effort to make the ball pass through your stars. So there's more opportunities. So again, we should see an uptick in stats, not a decrease. At minimum, you should at least stay the same. But I just pointed out to you, Steph Curry went from 30 to 25, 50% shooting to 40 in the finals. That's not getting it done. That's not getting it done. And I wanted to make sure I wasn't bugging, man. So I had to, of course, compare him to somebody. I went and checked out Kobe. 2009, Kobe averaged 26 points in the regular season. In the playoffs, 30. There's that uptick I was talking about. In 2010, when he won a championship, he averaged 27 points in the regular season. In the playoffs, 29. That's that increase I'm talking about. That's that increase. Big-time players show up, cool. But again, a practical sense, there's more opportunities. You're playing more minutes. There's more coaching involved, so there's more timeouts. You're coming out of a dead ball. You're in a half-court set. We go into our star. Steph Curry's not getting it done from that star perch. Now, Steph Curry supporters, they will come out and say, yo, Will, on Sunday, though, the MVP was back. 35 points, man. Really, though? I mean, really, is that what we're talking about? Are we talking about a finals MVP having a good game at home? Is that what it's really come down to? We're going to celebrate Steph Curry. 35 points in a home playoff game. 35 points, man, that's three quarters for Kobe Bryant. 35 points, that's a Tuesday afternoon for LeBron James. So I want to ask the Steph Curry fans, the NBA fans, do we have to reevaluate where we hold Steph Curry in the NBA hierarchy? I don't. Because I think I've always been level-headed and really understood where he's at in the NBA ranks. Let's not get it twisted. The boy is cold-blooded, man. The handle, the jump shot, phenomenal. A kid that came from barely having a Division I scholarship, he ain't no punk. Please, that's not what I'm trying to relay here. But he's just been somebody who's had kind of like the cheat code and a skill that is paramount to being a successful basketball player, which is shooting. He is the best ever. So it's kind of, I remember playing video games. You might have Shaq and Kobe on your team, but you could cheese. You could hit a whole bunch of threes with Glenn Rice. You know, Steph Curry kind of had the cheat code. A few years ago, NBA 2K, like the Denver team with Melo and J.R. Smith, J.R. Smith was unstoppable in the video games. It was like a cheat code. So I just ask you, Steph Curry fans, just pump the brakes. You know, he flashy. He could give you a couple gifts. He could shoot from deep. But let's hold our horses on all that greatest of all times and stuff. Kind of what the conversation was a few years ago. We see who the captain of that ship is. It's KD. Matter of fact, that KD acquisition is starting to look less of a luxury and more like a necessity. Where would they be if Kevin Durant didn't come to town? Y'all want to tell me Steph Curry had a great game the other day? It really? Is that what it's boiled down to? Is that what it's boiled down to? Good job, Mr. MVP. 35 points should be an everyday occurrence. And one thing about Steph Curry, when his jump shot is not falling, he just goes deeper and deeper and shoots shots. And that is always, that's not a second guess. I've always questioned his IQ on that. Because if you're a shooter, the defenders are going to play you so close. Which means, especially somebody with the handle that he has, you could get a layup at will. At will. Mix it up. Okay, you go 1 for 7. Go get 3 layups back to back to back. So I've always questioned his IQ on that. Like, yo, Steph, what's up? But I just had to ask that question to the people, man. I really just had to ask that question. Like, man, it's been years of this. Years. Steph Curry is suffering from the same thing that the Rockets are suffering. When things get tight, when defenses really ratchet up, we see beloved Wardell, Stephen Curry take a step back. And I need somebody to tell me why or help me understand. But the Golden State Warriors are up 2-1. They will be going it for Game 4 on Tuesday night. Tuesday night. The Rockets are a joke, man. That inconsistency, how can you explain it? How can you explain it? This is the Western Conference Finals. Did you see the highlight reel of James Harden's defense of the other day? Embarrassing, man. Embarrassing. Man, you got to help your team win by any means, man. I know that's not really your forte playing defense, but there's got to be something else. There's got to be something else, but that's who they are. That's who they've been all year. In the Eastern Conference, LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers were able to tie it up 2-2. Yo, I got to clap it up for Bron, man. Yo, Bron, you pulled a rabbit out of the freaking hat, man. Those first 2 games in Boston, you guys looked dead in the water. Looked like you were about to get swept. But LeBron, I mean, he got it done. He got it done. I've been critical. I believe there's still things to critique. But I understand how somebody could say, yo, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. I understand how people believe, yo, he's the best ever or definitely the best now. And he did a good job of being in attack mode. I really think that's the difference between when they're successful and when they're not. And I was watching the game with somebody. They're like, yo, why does LeBron keep clapping for the ball? When they had lags in their offensive game plan, it's when LeBron James got happy with that dribbling BS that he usually does. When they're most successful is when he's making quick moves. Somebody show me otherwise. When they're successful is when he makes the decision in 3 or 4 seconds. Okay, catch, I'm going to the post. Catch, I'm turning around shooting. That is the difference between when they win and when they don't. And ESPN is driving me crazy with the supporting cast is not good enough. Bro, if you're going to give him the credit when his supporting cast does well, then you got to blame him when they don't do well. It can't be rigged in his favor every time. Well, J.R. Smith had 15 points today. Must have been LeBron. J.R. Smith has 0 points today. Damn that J.R. Smith. It can't be both ways. It can't be. And to be honest, when they win and lose, Tristan Thompson is the same guy. He's the same guy showing hard on screens, running to the paint, rebounding. The only difference I really see in wins and losses is LeBron's gameplay and his decision making. Him choosing to put his head down and be in attack mode and being a weapon versus being nonchalant and passive. That is the only difference I see in their wins and losses. It ain't Larry Nance Jr. and Tristan Thompson. Kyle Korver still running his ass around screens trying to be productive on the road, at home, anywhere. Wins, losses, it's the same. But I wanted to talk about these Celtics for a minute, man. I brought this up a few weeks ago. I am befuddled by the difference in road and home games. Dog, Boston Celtics, Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown. I know Cleveland is seems like a far-off mystery land, but it's not. Son, it is in the U.S. Why can't you guys perform on the road? Jaylen Brown missed 3 dunks yesterday. Where they do that at? I don't understand it. I really don't get it. Shout out to my man, Derrison Anthony, D.A. You've heard him on this show before. So D.A. texted me today. And he said, Will, I don't understand why Brad Stevens gets so much credit when they win. And when they lose, he gets none of the blame. I said, yo, DA, I understand. I understand, man. I get it. But I have no problem with that arrangement. I think Brad Stevens is a large part of their success. We've seen already, I mean, the evidence is in his favor. He had Isaiah Thomas in the MVP vote. Isaiah Thomas went to another team. He can't even get minutes. He had Kyrie Irving. He lost him. We thought the Celtics were going to get swept, and now they're in the Eastern Conference Finals. Who is the person that is the constant? That's Brad Stevens, right? Al Horford been in the league 10, 12 years. This is the best run we've ever seen him have. I mean, who else do we credit but Brad Stevens? Now, those guys go on the road and they struggle and they miss dunks. I mean, that's not Brad Stevens. That's the players on the field. But we can see and we know that schematically they're in place to be successful, right? Jaylen Brown still has the same opportunities. He still has the ability to get to the rim. We understand that from a coaching perspective, everybody that comes off that bench knows what they need to do, knows their role, right? I mean, the Boston Celtics got some dude named Ajale coming off the bench hitting threes. Jeff Van Gundy said, damn, anytime you could get a reserve player to put points in, that's icing on the cake. So, yeah, I'm going to credit Brad Stevens. And when they falter, no, I'm not going to discredit him because we know the scheme is there. The Morris twins have been in the league for 7 years. This is the first time either one of them is playing big-time minutes or contributing on a successful team. There's been two of them, two twins, D.A., for 7 years. When they got with Brad Stevens, oh, now we see them. Okay. Now one is actually contributing to a winner. And some might say, Will, you contradict yourself because LeBron James, when he plays well, when his supporting cast plays well, you say give him credit. And when they don't play well, you say don't give him credit or don't blame him. But he's a player. He's on the floor. Brad Stevens, his scheme didn't diminish. Those players still know what they need to do. His job is done. And I would say this. with leadership of any kind. You know, just think about it. Our mothers. Our mothers would hope that we probably stop drinking, stop smoking. You know, they probably wish we go get us a nice church girl instead of some of the thoughts we be running around with. And we mess up time and time again. But that's not a discredit to the job that our mothers and our families have done. They told us what's right. They put the scheme and the values and the morals in place. If we have a misstep similar to the Boston Celtics having missteps on the road, that's not a knock against our leadership. So the answer to my brother's text, I got no problem with Brad Stevens getting credit. And then when they lose, him being in the clear. Because he held up his end of the bargain. The schemes in place for them to be successful. Jaylen Brown getting to the rim and not making a dunk. I mean, what else you want? What else do you want? What else we got in the NBA? We went to the Rockets. Oh, my God. Are y'all not done with the Rockets yet? Chris Paul, where are you? Y'all can miss me with that Hall of Fame and the grit. Stop it. This is an offense that is geared towards him. D'Antoni rolls out the ball, say, do what you want. And he can't eclipse 20 points. He can't get 10 assists. Man. Yo, Draymond Green gonna mess around and snatch a Hall of Fame career from y'all. Draymond Green is not playing, man. Shout out to him. That's what I like. I like overachievers. He said, I only got a little bit of talent, but I'm about to squeeze the heck out of this. Get me a few rings, get me some money, and I might end up in that Hall of Fame. And as I mentioned earlier, man, Kevin Durant is just phenomenal. And that acquisition is really looking like a necessity. Because I wonder where they would be without him. He is phenomenal. But we'll see if the Rockets can bounce back tonight. I look forward to LeBron on the road. And we got some good NBA basketball, man. You're listening to WBH Radio. Shout out to everybody who gets to hear this, man. I definitely appreciate you. I want to talk about my Yankees for a minute. The Yankees are rolling. Rolling. And they doing it in a way that I deem the right way. And it's not overpaying for names. They building up through the farm system. Them young boys coming out of the weeds in right field. Gleyber Torres, Tyler Austin. You know, the Yankees might have another rookie of the year on their hands in Tyler Austin. And that's a credit to Mr. Brian Cashman, somebody I had the privilege of working alongside. I think the Yankees had some down years when they were chasing names. Chasing Randy Johnsons, chasing the Carl Pavanos. But Mr. Cashman and the organization seemed to go back to the drawing board. They went back and said, you know what, we need to regroup. We need to start bringing guys to the farm the same way we did Derek Jeter, the same way we did Jorge Posada. And it's going to be interesting because they have a lot of bodies. You know, Mr. Greg Bird should be coming back shortly. Jacoby Ellsbury might be coming back soon. So, you know, it sounds like good problems to have. And you know the farm system is good when you trade away assets. And they're producing at their new homes. Dustin Fowler, a dude that came up for Yankees and in his first game, dislocated his kneecap, I believe. Got traded to the Oakland Athletics in the Sonny Gray trade. And now he's starting in center field for the Athletics. So shout out to him, man. Shout out to the Yankees. But it came out recently that former Yankee Robinson Cano was suspended for PEDs. Told you how fond I was of Mr. Robbie Cano. You know, I think they call him a natural baseball player. When you look at his swing, it's just like, man, fine wine. And one of his former teammates, Mark Teixeira, he was on the radio with Michael Kay. And he made a comment that he wasn't too surprised that Robbie Cano tested positive for PEDs. Now, this is a former teammate, somebody that shared a clubhouse with him, somebody that won a World Series with him. And, of course, everybody had their opinion on that. Like, damn, Teixeira, that was foul to say that about your teammate. You know, I wonder what you guys think about that. What do I think? I think there's multiple levels to it. You know, I think there's multiple levels to it. First and foremost, me personally, just the way I live my life, the truth can never be wrong. The truth can never be wrong. You can't condemn somebody for telling the truth, right? If, hey, I don't like your shirt, I don't like your shoes, this, that. It is what it is, homie. If I lied to you, you'd be mad then too. So, you can't blame anybody for telling the truth. So if Teixeira really felt that way, hey, that's his prerogative. But, you know, there are levels. And the clubhouse is a sacred place. You know, having the privilege to work in one, it is a sacred place. And if Teixeira was privy to this information as an insider, I think it is a little bit wrong, or I understand why people are rubbed the wrong way by him disclosing that. Because you came in as an insider. You got that information from being on the inside. It's not like you came as somebody from the press. Then it's fair game. Then it's fair game. But to use your access and now turn that into public fodder or public information, yeah, that's wrong. I know athletes really talk about the media in a negative light at times. But the really good ones, there's a relationship there. The media is not just running around like a bunch of yahoos trying to embarrass athletes. No, there's a partnership. You know, when anything's happening in the organization, yo, media, this is what we're doing. When the media comes in the locker room, they walk up to a player, hey, you ready? The player might say yes, no. The player might say, okay, I'm ready. The player might say, I'll talk to you, but off the record. Like with me, I was in a clubhouse. I wouldn't disclose. Now, I'm not hiding some Yankees crack addiction, no. But I'm just saying, I came in those doors as an insider. So for me to disclose information to the public, that's deceitful. Especially since that player didn't know he was talking to a media member. You know, it's kind of like a legal search and seizure. That's not fair. But, I mean, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And Mark Teixeira, man, you've been on TV for a year, and the only interesting thing you ever said was bashing a teammate or something negative towards a teammate. That's corny. That's corny. You've been on TV for a year. And another piece that makes it bad or makes it hard for other players to stomach is if you act one way towards them, and in the public, you're different. See, me, I'm an a-hole all the time. So people know, okay, they know what they're dealing with. But if Mark Teixeira, if you thought he was using PEDs and you never said anything in that clubhouse, for your first comments to be public, that's corny. If you ran up to Robbie and said, yo, Robbie, you doing some shady stuff? If you said that in the clubhouse, yo, Robbie, I don't stand by that, man. Y'all better not be doing that stuff over there, man. If you said something like that to him to his face, then you could go and say whatever you want to the public. Because those players have been warned. They know who you are and what your character is. That's why guys like Charles Barkley can say whatever they want, because they're that same way all the time. It's only talking behind somebody's back when you literally talk behind their back when you scared to say it to their face. And something tells me Mark Teixeira never went up to Robbie Cano in the middle of a championship run and said, yo, dude, you sticking needles in your ass? So I'm sure that rubs people the wrong way even more. But my Yankees is rolling. You dig? You're listening to WBH Radio. It's your boy William Holly. The great Serena Williams is getting ready to take part in the 2018 French Open. There's been a lot of conversation about her seeding or lack thereof. Serena Williams went to have a baby. You know, congratulations to her. That's beautiful. And when she left, she was the number one woman in the world. But now that she's back, Tennis Association, like, you at the bottom of the barrel, baby. You know, the show must go on. We glad you had a baby. You moving on motherhood, but the show must go on, and other women have risen to the top of the sporting world. Now, the conversation is, yo, should we give Serena back the ranking she had before she left? Man, y'all not going to get me to comment on a woman and her baby. And nah, not in today's day and age. Nah, I'm bowing out. Nah, but in all seriousness, I think the Tennis Association is doing the right thing. Serena should not be able to recapture the number one seed. You took a step away to be a mother. That's great. But as we mentioned, other ladies have ascended to the top. So that means Serena Williams is going to go in the tournament at the bottom, which equates to her facing the toughest competition early on. And I really believe that's the way it should be. I would like to speak to a lawyer and ask them from a rule standpoint, what would that rule look like? How do you write that? What language do you use? Because if you say, oh, a woman coming off of a leave, so does that pertain to people that take medical leave? Does that pertain to people who retire and then come back? Right? That's one portion. And then, okay, it's just for pregnant women. Well, how much maternity leave are we giving them? What if a woman wants to stay home with her child for the first year? What if a woman wants to stay home for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years? Should they come back with their ranking after 5 years? That's going to be really hard to word. Then if you say, oh, 1 year, then the conversation is going to be, oh, you're rushing a woman back from her paternity leave. I think the World Tennis Association is doing the right thing, leaving where it is. I was cycling through Twitter and somebody said, hey, if the goal is to win the championship, why does the seed even matter to Serena? Hell, get your stiffest competition out of the way early. Serena, good luck climbing your way back to the top, man. I'm sure that's not easy. Switching gears to another person in sports, another well-known female athlete, and that's Danica Patrick. Danica is announcing her retirement from racing. Can somebody tell me when her career even began? Somebody tell me when her career even began, man. I'm glad it's over for her. She has been a sideshow since the beginning. She's been on the racetrack for years and only has one race or one win to show for it. I am a black male. I am all for equality. I know about the minority struggle. I know all about it. And I think individuals like Danica Patrick really set the movement back. Set it back. I wrote a piece on my website, wbhradio.com, and I asked, do minorities truly want equality? When Danica Patrick is celebrated for being just a woman, that doesn't help the cause. You know, that is actually a concession being made for you. And isn't that what we're fighting against? When Danica Patrick is one of the most highly compensated athletes in the sport, despite not winning anything, that's not a good look. If I could talk to Danica, I would ask her, why do you think you have all these endorsements? It's not because you're good. It's because you're a pretty face. And isn't that what you're fighting against? You're not good. You're not one of the best. We would never allow one of these male athletes with your record get a GoDaddy Super Bowl commercial. So that is not equality taking place. That is concessions. That is favoritism. Oh, she a pretty face. She's just, okay, let's pull in. Let's slap some money on her. Now, Danica, hey, get your money, baby. I'm not hating, but I want you, I just hope that you're honest and you understand where these endorsements come from, where this profile comes from. I hope you understand why E60 wants to speak to you. It's not because you're good. Equality would be stepping up to the plate and say, you know what? I didn't earn that endorsement. Go give it to Dale Jr. Go give it to freaking Jimmy Johnson, whoever's number one at the top. In that piece I wrote, I talked about the women's soccer team. I remember there was a World Cup years ago, and I believe they came in second. They came in second. And we brought them all around the world like they had just won it all. They were on nighttime TV, Jay Leno, Dave Letterman. They were on magazine covers. When do we reward second place male athletes? So ladies, minorities, hey, I thought we were fighting against inconsistencies. I thought we were fighting against not being viewed as the same of those to our left and our right. People like Danica Patrick, who take concessions, who allow themselves to be in the forefront even though their accomplishments don't warrant it, that's setting the movement back. But enjoy retirement. Enjoy retirement. Yo, this is WBH Radio. I'm out.